you recall, in trying to assist us answering the issues raised by Honourable Lee, that affected all of us, not this is champions, the privacy versus disclosure. We did ask for an opinion from the legal department, which they presented, or not presented, which they prepared, and it has been circulated. Yes? Can we ask legal to very briefly just tell us what it is? Members want clarity on that one, they can ask. Otherwise, I mean, immediately thereafter, we'll get into the agenda items that are outstanding for us, which I'm hoping shouldn't take us very long. Or are we satisfied that we've got the legal opinion, we don't need a presentation? It's up to you.
Legal question. There is the right to privacy of individuals who make direct donations to political parties to perceive the requirement of openness and accountability as contained in Section 1 of the Constitution, and whether in light of Sections 18 and 19 of the Constitution, the details of individuals who donate directly to political parties should remain private. After having considered the applicable law and the Constitution's jurisprudence on the matter, our views are as follows. The right to privacy and freedom of association. The right to privacy and freedom of association, as well as political rights, contained in the Bill of Rights are not absolute and may be limited in terms of Section 36 of the Constitution. The nature of these rights are such that if exercised in the public arena, it would enjoy far less protection than when exercised within a truly personal realm. The limitation imposed on these rights can be justified as it seeks to enhance openness and accountability. That is the limitation. Section 37 of the Constitution enjoins courts, tribunals, or forums to take into account international law when it seeks to interpret the Bill of Rights. International law in this regard demands adherence to the principles of openness and accountability when dealing with the issue of political party funding, and in particular South Africa is a signatory to the United Nations Convention that seeks to promote political accountability and combat corruption through inter alia access to information. Our view, therefore, is that the question is not whether the rights in question can be trumped by the principles of openness and accountability, as we view them as equally important, but rather whether those rights contained in the Bill of Rights can be limited, and if so, whether that limitation can be justified in an open and democratic society. It is therefore our view that the answer to both these questions must be in the affirmative. Thank you, Chair.
Any comments? Honourable Lee?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the view and the opinion, and I'm not sure where we go from here. I mean, we have our own view and opinion, and not terribly different, really. It's in the application that there might be some difference.
Yes, Honourable
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson, and thanks for the legal opinion of your good self. So, Chairperson, I would propose that maybe as practice, there will be no harm if we seek our own legal opinions as well, as different parties represented in this committee. Thanks, then we'll come back some other time.
All right. You. I think that request is fine. I mean, that will only apply if there's a real deadlock. If we meet each other halfway, then there's a problem. But I think
it's possible
to meet each other. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. If the leader arises, we are going to have a problem.
Honourable members, that deals with the legal opinion. The next one really becomes part of our agenda, and maybe we should start with the Honourable Dean, because that was specifically yours. You recall I indicated that there were very few items that were outstanding, and now the drafters must probably also pay attention. We had the interpretation of equitable and quality. I mean, equitable and proportionality. You remember that was the argument raised by, amongst others, Gordy. And that also goes with the 90-10. I think those two bullets we can put together. Then there was direct donations, and that's where Honorable Lees will lead us. And then whether there are donations from foreign foundations and foreign individuals, whether that is acceptable or not acceptable. If we dealt with those, we would be able to reach a point where we can allow Michael and then to go to draft one. Agree? That's outside of the regulations, of course. So it's really those four items that we want to discuss. And if there are others that have been introduced in this morning's discussion, let's have a brief discussion on them and then ask the drafters to do that. Honorable Kapoor.
My apologies, Chairperson. Maybe before we move to these items that we were speaking to, if we may be clarified by the legal minds sitting here with us, why did they take this as Section 76 bill? Thanks.
All right. You remember when we said the tagging, we said it did not likely be a Section 76 tag. 75. I mean, it's that one that has to go to the NCOP. Or not. It's okay. Are you saying it'll be a 75?
In all probabilities, it will be a 75, as the Constitution says it must be national legislation. What we just want to clarify is that all bills, it only depends on the type of procedure that will happen in two houses. But all bills go from the National Assembly, in this case, to the NCOP, almost for confirmation, for lack of a better word. That is all bills. But this will be a 75. The voting procedure will differ between 75 and 76.
Okay. I think the questions were raised because 76 have got time implications and so on. So we don't have that challenge here. All right. Can we go then in the order that it is on our agenda, honourable members, or the preference for which one we should start with? Good. Let's then take it on in this order, and that should be the interpretation of equitable as containing 236. And how does it affect the distribution of funds? Specifically, we were talking about the 140 million IEC fund, if memory serves me correctly. And the funds that the speaker deals with, that was not an issue because that one is purely proportional. It was really that 140 million that we were talking about that is managed by the IEC currently. I'm not sure if anybody wants to take a first bite at it. Just to repeat what the concerns were. The concern was that it was split at a 90-10 currently, and the 90% of that 140 was split proportionally, and therefore all parties had a bite of the cake. The 10% was only calculated on the basis of whether you are represented in a province. Although that money went straight to the party, but it was based on whether you are represented in a province. There are parties that are national and that are not at the province, and they felt that the equity or the equitable part of it was missing. And we're hoping that out of this discussion we will come with some theory. We're not going to come with the answer and say, honourable members, whether it's 90-10, but how do we bridge that gap, or is it possible to bridge that gap? I've had informal discussions with a few people, and I think it is possible that we can bridge that gap. But let's put it to the committee and get formal endorsement on that one. And because Honourable Mulder, you and Gordy were the leaders on it. I'm not sure if you guys are going to take the first bite. Gordy isn't here, but he'll have to abide with all of us to take this position. And then the rest of us can comment, critique, and or agree with what is going to come up.
And if Jefferson, could I try? If you look at our program, we say we need to take a decision on the interpretation of equitable as contained in section 236 in the Constitution and how it affects the distribution of public funds at national provincial level. Now, from my point of view, if you talk about the equitable part of the provision, it could deal with two different things. The one would be in the interpretation of section 236. What is equitable? What is proportional? And my view is that specifically in interpreting 236, we can go into a long technical debate in terms of the principle. I don't think we're going to come to an answer for the simple reason it's a question of how do you interpret 236? What does equitable mean in that context? And we'll all have our different views. In the end, it may end up in a court where a court will give its interpretation of what equitable and proportional means. And it may come with an outcome that may satisfy some of us or may satisfy none of us. We don't know. So we can have a long discussion with regard to that. I think it's not realistic, or it's not the best way to go about that. The second thing that deals with equitable is the current process that brought us up to this point. And that deals with how it's been done for the last 20 years. And the problem is this. We are dealing in total with 15 parties that are in line for being funded in terms of the current fund and the current act, 15 parties. 13 of those parties are elected on the national level, 13. But there are the two further parties that are elected only on provincial level that do not serve in the national parliament. It brings us to a total of 15. The way it's been done up till now, simply put, is the following. When it comes to the 90% proportional, all 15 parties were in play in the formula. But when it comes to the equitable part, in terms of the current interpretation, only the parties represented in provincial legislatures came into play in the calculation when it comes to the equitable part. The practical implication of that was, up till now, that we have three parties on national level who were excluded when it comes to the calculation of the equitable part. And the question would be, and that's the point Mr. Gordon specifically made, how can we rectify that? Because clearly it's a problem, and clearly if you look at the results in terms of practical numbers, it creates a strange anomaly. For example, if I can be practical, a party like Akhang, who has two members in parliament on national level, gets way less than that one provincial party with one member in a provincial legislature. And if you look at the votes, for example, it also is a huge distortion. That provincial party received 15,000 votes, Akhang received 52,000 votes, but they get less money in terms of the current formula. And we can go into the details and we can look at the numbers, but I think it's not a difficult problem to solve. I would suggest that the current act, as it is, gives us already the answer. Because the current act makes provision for the formula that is being used with regard to proportionality. And if you look at the current act, you look at section 5, allocation from funds of the current act, and you look at 5.2a, which indicates how proportional distribution should be, 5.2a Roman 1. It says in part on the principle of proportionality, and then it gives three options. And the option currently used in the formula is what is in the current act, bracket, small cc, bracket. And all it says basically is that when it comes to the proportional part, you take into consideration the totality of the situation and your calculations in practice means it's calculated in terms of representation of parties on national level as well as provincial level. And it gives you the result, which is acceptable, it seems, to everybody. The problem comes with the equitable part, and we're talking about equity now. And there again, the Act gives you the options. It gives you the option to say how you should do it. The problem was, until this point, if you look again at Section 5 of the Act, current Act 5.2, in this instance, then again 5.2a, but this time Roman 2, you'll find that it gives, and then it gives you three options again, exactly the same options it gives in terms of proportionality. But up till now, the one that's been used was in brackets triple small b, which made provision that only the provincial representation was into taken into account when it came to equity, the equitable part. That caused the distortion. So I would suggest that the easiest way to deal with it is straight and simple. Use the current provision in the Act CCC, which makes provision that it can be done in exactly the same way that the proportional part is being dealt with on national level. And by doing that, you basically solve the whole question as a problem with regard to equity. I'm of the view that that will bring an equitable part. Then separate from that is the whole discussion whether percentages are, if that comes into play. 90-10, 80-20, 50-50. But that, in the end, will not be in the Act. That will be in the regulation. And I think that will be a separate discussion in terms of what it actually means. But if you can fix the principal problem now at the moment, I would suggest that the drafters should only include, with regard to equitable, the current CCC. With regard to the current proportional part, they should only include the double C, and that they in totality remove the other options because they draw distortions and we don't need them at all. Thank you.
Can I repeat that? You're saying 2A, 1, you take away double A and double B, and 2A, Roman 2, you take away triple A and triple B. That's your proposal.
Yes.
All right, there's a proposal on the table, honorable members, and the net effect of that is that everybody will share equally, and it will then solve, hopefully, the Gordy problem. We're not talking about rand and cents, we're just talking about the equitable and proportional. Any takers on suggestions and or honorable things?
Thank you very much, Jefferson and colleagues. You may think I was outside and I don't know what you were saying, but it's been part of our discussions with the 8 other political parties that we've had, because we represent 10 parties, so we've been having a discussion on how we deal, because it's the smaller parties that are actually prejudiced in some way or the other, and we really wanted to, from the beginning, I think, Chair, you're aware that we've been talking about proportional and equitable and what does it mean, and we must get advice on it. But I think triple C in the legislation, as proposed by Honorable Mulder, takes care of the principle of proportional. And it also, equitable. And it also confirms the role of the National Assembly members in the calculation of the equitable portion. And so I would fully support what he says. And then let's see who's going to be winners, who's going to be losers when we go further and then look at percentages from there. And I think that's not an exercise for today. Maybe, I don't know if you've suggested, but maybe one could suggest that we have a subcommittee of 4 people from the ANC, GA, EFF, and us other parties, who can just unpack this as we move forward and then see what we come up with before the date in terms of enhancing and contributing to the regulation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Just to re-emphasize, regulations will come way after draft 2, so it's not an urgent thing for now, where we talk about the actual 90, 10, 50, 50, but the principles of what we're discussing now. Anybody else that has a different view on this?
Mr. Chairman, we don't have a different view. We just have to look at it. It's a proposal being put, and I need to talk to my own people about it before I take a position.
Let me reiterate what I reiterated all along. Even in draft 1, if we put it as AA or BB or CC, remember it's going to go back to the public, and it will come back, and you'll be able to look at it. So it's not as if we put it in now. It's just we were hoping to make it as accurate as possible in the first place. So, for this exercise, honourable members, then can we take it as proposed? So you remove all these other things. All right. Thank you very much, honourable members. The next item that we then needed to discuss was whether political party donations by individuals should be disclosed publicly. Let's discuss that one before we come to through the foundation. Started assisting us in that regard from a legal point of view. Let me again, just for the purposes of reminding, the discussion was full disclosure, half disclosure, one. And secondly, the method and timing of disclosure. If we say full disclosure, when do we give it to the IEC and on what platform do they disclose it? If we say half disclosure, if it does go to the IEC, how does it get accessed by the stakeholders? I think that is roughly summing up what the discussions were. And we will need to get some point, and again, like I say, round two, we can always refine if we need to. I'm not sure if I'm putting you on the spot on the release, if you lead it, but you can, you could take us through.
Mr. Chairman, I think that the... we've got a legal opinion about the whether what trumps what and what doesn't and so on, and I think there's no argument about that. The question really is the degree of disclosure and how, just like you've been putting it. And so I've had some help with various cases that have been heard on these matters, and it seems clear that there's a different test for individuals as opposed to corporates in terms of disclosure. And I think that we did talk about that previously, but you know there's very case law that does support that. And so I would suggest that in the drafting we need to look at the disclosure having a cap, which we've talked about, that the...
I'm sorry. We are not talking about directly to parties.
Yes.
I'm saying it for the interest of our journalists. To the Multi-Party Democracy Fund,
that's a
totally different. I'm saying it for the interest of yeah. We're talking about disclosures, donor directly to the political party.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that clarity. So you know, we talked about a cap. It's the level of cap that needs some discussion. Then it's a question of even above the cap, the method of disclosure, whether in our view, it should be to in this way we keep talking about the IEC, so we assume about the IEC, and then the IEC would disclose on a needs basis if the applications, if there's some sort of legal challenge or something like that. And Mr. Chairman, I you know, we have been told that, you know, who the best are and the worst are, we've got a scale and so on. But it's interesting that there are many countries that have got legislation in place which would kind of be very similar to what we're proposing. I mean, for instance, Denmark, which is held up to be one of the bastions of democracy and social responsibility, they must disclose identity of donors over a certain threshold, the cap, that like we're talking about, but there's no obligation to disclose what amount is donated. France, only an annual total amount of donations must be published, and there are different thresholds or limits for corporate versus individuals. Italy is full disclosure, but with a very high threshold of 50,000 euros per annum. Czech Republic, identity of donors must be reported but not the amount, and the reports are not published. They're not put into the public domain. Finland, details of donations must be reported to the Ministry of Justice, but there's no obligation on the Ministry to publish these reports. Greece, which perhaps some people won't consider a good example, given their classes. The identity but not the amount of donations must be reported. There's no obligation for these reports to be made public. however, they may be made public on request. Netherlands, identity of the donor, but not the amount, must be reported and published. Slovenia, anonymous donations are not explicitly banned. Interesting. Austria, only the identity, but not the amount, must be reported. Sweden, there is no obligation for the donor to be publicly named. Another Nordic country which we consider to be high social responsibility. Malta, no reporting obligations. Mozambique, details of donations must be reported to an oversight agency but are not published. Bolivia, political parties must disclose donations but reports do not have to be made public. India, parties must disclose contributions only when the donor is a public company. Israel, there is a provision for disclosure, but the lists are not necessarily published. Singapore, parties must disclose contributions received, but the information is not made public. Switzerland, some cantons require disclosure, but some do not. Kenya, political party funding information is available to the public, but only on request and at a cost. Rwanda, political party funding information is available to the public, but only on request and at a cost. So, Mr. Chairman, I'm giving you these just to illustrate that the international community has a number of different ways of dealing with this. But if one looks at the ones, and we haven't been selective, Mr. Chairman, there's a lot of non-public disclosure. I think everyone is full disclosure, except I think there was one, Malta, with no obligation. But very few are full public disclosure. And that's what we are recommending as being our position with this. They all seem to have caps. And then when there is full disclosure, like in Italy, they have a very high cap, or threshold, call it what you like, below which there's no disclosure at all. So, Mr. Chairman, we would urge that in the drafting, a provision is made, a threshold amount later, that there is provision made for a distinction between individuals and corporates in terms of the disclosure. Or if we're going to do a disclosure to some kind of state entity, that perhaps then there isn't a need for a distinction between the individuals and corporates, but there is some kind of mechanism that would allow disclosure under certain circumstances. So, Mr. Chairman, we'd really request that be taken into account in the drafting, and if necessary, we will then look at amendments later. But let's try and get it as close as we can to consensus now, if we can. Thank you very much.
That was very helpful, Honourable Members. Let's open it up for discussion. What we're trying to do is to find a way of recording it in our draft. Not to be all and end all, but there will be a second draft. So how do we say option one and option two? I don't know that that's possible if you do the draft, or do you say option one and then revisit it, those type of things. But let's open it up for comments. Anybody who likes to comment. Honourable Mulder?
Chairperson, could I ask Mr. Lees if that document could be made available to our committee members?
Yeah, sure.
We have
Tiffany. If it helps you to come my way, I'll give it to you and you can get you.
Honourable Singh.
Yeah, thank you very much. Chairperson, I know we've been looking at this, and our drafters have been looking at this from a strictly drafting of a bill point of view. And this is how bills are drafted. It's put out for public comment in the format that you want it. And there's no opportunity for alternatives. Whereas if you had a white paper and all these papers, then you put all the alternatives and people come back with preferences. But is there no hybrid way of when we put this out to the public, of suggesting that there are different views in a memorandum or something like that, so that the public can comment on these different views. Because I think it's important that we take them into consideration so that we give them these options. For example, when I talk to the next item on the foreign, what you call it, foundation, I'm also going to make a proposal in that regard. But I think the proposal should not be shut down at this level, because we're still going out for public consultation. So is there a way now, you know, and this is unusual circumstances that this committee is dealing with, but it also must give the public an opportunity to comment on the various options, and eventually we'll take a decision one way or the other. Just asking that question aloud, sir.
Well, let's take Nakula, and then we'll take Matthias, and then we will take Mona. But just on this point, you know, again, because we're thinking on our feet, I'm not sure, Mr. Thiel and Mr. Prince, when you said it has to be one or the other. I'm just looking at the current one. When Mona was talking, you were saying it either AAAA, BBBB or CCCC. Now, unless I understood you incorrectly, when you said, no, it can't be this or that or whatever, it must be just one, but the very bill that you're talking about had three different options. Both for equity, and I'm saying it's because I don't want it to be bogged down. I mean, I have a strong view that there must be total disclosure. But I should also afford the other side an opportunity, and we can then go to the voting or whatever we want to do when we get to part B. I'm saying this is for the sake of soliciting. So you guys must tell us why you're actually forcing us to say it's either or. If we could put both of them for the second round, it will help me. But let's take the names as we've spoken to Nakuda, Matthijs, and then Mulder.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I think I agree with your proposal that it should, all options must be on or must be put together so that whoever wants to comment will have both options to look at. Honorable Chairperson, I think as the ANC, for the sake of openness, transparency and accountability, we are proposing that a full disclosure should be made public. And these documents should be submitted to the IEC by the end of the calendar year for the IEC to make it public. I think that goes with the opinion that is presented by the legal team of transparency, accountability and openness. We shouldn't have any, we don't have, actually as the ANC we are saying that we don't have anything to hide. So that is why we are making this proposal for the sake of our democracy, that everything else should be made public, especially donations to political parties. We don't want a situation where money will play the dirty game of controlling our democracy in South Africa. So we don't want that. That's our take, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Honorable Matthijs.
Thank you, Chair. Our discussion now is bordering on us self-regulating ourselves as political parties. So it's a bit of those catch-22 situations, because now we're determining how our political parties are going to function and answer to the public. We are representatives of the public, right? We are voted in here by the public, and ultimately it's the public that must determine what they want to know from us. As the EFF, we are obviously very clear, our seventh cardinal pillar is that we want to open, accountable, free government, and we must live by example. So we are pushing for full public disclosure of funding. And it's also in light of the vast corruption that we have in our country that needs to curb, but it needs to start with us to be able to do that. So So I'm also agreeing that we push that thing of having, give the public options. I mean, not just the submissions that we receive. The public is dying, and that's what they're asking from us, is that they want full public disclosure of where political parties are getting their money. I don't remember any submissions that we received where there was anybody who asked for anything else or gave us any other options. So this is the time where political parties need to listen to their constituencies. So yes, let's, if that's optional, and to give options and see what the second round of submissions to come in, let's do that. But yes, full public disclosure, our people need to know. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Honourable Miller?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I don't think we are all that far apart here. There are three issues to deal with, and I think we've got consensus on two of them. The first one is, I think we all agree that those kind of disclosures need to be made above a certain threshold. We have not agreed what the threshold would be, but we say below threshold, no disclosures necessary, but we talk about it, that's the first one. I think we agree about that. The second one is, I don't think there's any dissension that we need a full disclosure. I think we agree on that as well. The only outstanding thing is, should it be publicly, immediately, or should that disclosure be made, full disclosure be made to a different body? And once, if I understand Mr. Lees correct, it should be made to a different body, be it IEC, whatever the case may be. It would not mean that that information is not available. It would have a different mechanism to trigger to get that information under certain circumstances. So I think if you look at the three things, the only one where we need to give an option is whether it should be full disclosure, whether it should be publicly immediately, or should be disclosed to some other entity under certain circumstances.
All right, let me give my take. I'm not adjudicating on this, but this is my take. That for me, there has to be, if we are talking about accountability, as I've argued all along, there can't be accountability in the dark. That is in my argument. There has to be disclosure to be able to be held accountable. And transparency and all those things are part of the Constitution, that's my take. I think that because somewhere we were talking about that these things must be credible, they would have to, when I declare as a political party, I should be declaring to the IEC, because I'm saying we were declaring the IEC for the next year. I'll go to the IEC and say as Party Vincent, these are the people that have donated to me for the past 12 months. And South Africans can then come and verify it like we do in the declaration. So then, if I'm not telling the truth, somebody else will say, but he's not disclosing fully. So it has to be submitted to the IEC. And I am saying, honourable members, that the IEC must be able to make that thing, not every day, but at least certainly once a year, must be able to say, these are the individuals that donated to Party Vincent. And I'm arguing that for two reasons. The IEC's books are audited. Honourable Matei says she was supporting them. They're audited, they become public. So we must take it to the IEC. The IEC in its annual report must be able to say these are the parties, very much like we were talking to Michael Sachs saying, but it should be declared. So the IEC must be able to say, this is what I've received from Party Vincent. And South Africans can come and say, but he hasn't done it. So full disclosure. I agree with the caps or the limits, and I'm saying once a year we must declare it to the IEC, and the IEC must be duty bound to put it in its annual report, very much like you were saying, who are the parties that are not accounting for their money. So why in one hand we say, tell us who's not accounting for their money, on time, name and shame, and on this side we are saying something else. So my take would be, and I'm saying, my take would be full disclosure. Once a year in the annual report, compulsory the IEC must do it, because it will help us self-regulate, and it must then agree with what the criteria is. That's my thing. But if members are saying, let's put both of them, I mean, it shouldn't be a strange mess, but at least people would know where we're coming from in the first round. And when we get back around about the 24th of October, Cindy, after the second public hearing, because I think those are around about the 7th and 8th of November, between the 8th of November and the 30th or the 28th of November, we're going to have to bend it down one way or the other. That will happen. So you'll have to craft it so it has at least all those options now, because anyway, this is the first draft. And unless there's a real crime that you're committing, I think that's the way for us to go. On the disclosure limit on the brochures, and I don't know, I suppose that comes into the regulations, isn't it? Does it, or where? But again, we must talk about it. I know that at some point Honorable Bongo shouted a figure of 10,000 and somebody else said 100,000. The principle for me is that it must not be so much that it can influence wherever the case might be. It must also not be so low that it becomes indirect. Yeah. So 100,000 is a figure that I could, out of my head, say, look, anything above 100,000, automatic disclosure. Below 100,000, non-disclosure. That would be my take. So I'm trying to wrap up all these things so that members can comment on them. But that's the proposal we're hoping to take forward, and I'm hoping that they do together. If there's a different view, then we take it. Honourable Lee.
Chairman, I think that there's room for agreement at 100,000, but I think one must bear in mind that we're drafting a bill to become an act. And that figure might be reasonable now, but in 10 years' time won't be. And so, you know, you've got inflation that'll eat into it. So isn't that when it normally goes into regulation?
Irregulation.
And then, generally, I think one shouldn't, I'm not sure that this should be a third option, but in the list that I read out to you, there were a number of countries who insist on naming but no amount. And I assume that what they're saying is, well, we know that you gave to the VA, but it's really no business of anyone's how much you gave. So there's a kind of, but I'm not familiar with what their motivation is, but there are a number of countries that do that. But let's leave that one for now, I think. But so if we're talking 100,000, we can probably get agreement now, but in 5 years' time, through the regulations, that's great.
Yes, Jefferson, the Act will say that there's a threshold and there will be regulations to say what the threshold would be. My problem with only declaring the name and no amount, I could create the impression that it's below the threshold and I don't declare at all. Nobody will know.
Yes, Honourable, second.
Thank you, Chair. The issue of the threshold also, it has to be really clear in the regulation, so that if I want to give a million, I shouldn't break it in small amounts that will be acceptable, and I don't have to disclose and yet they come in to harm us.
Yeah. I'm sure we'll get to that in the regulation. It's an annual amount and it's that type of thing you have to do accordingly. The next, so we've agreed on how we'll craft it, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right. The next agenda item was whether direct donation from court, and remember, we're talking cash and kind. In all these instances, we're talking cash and kind.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the direct donations from foreign foundations and foreign and individuals and corporates should be prohibited. Again, it's directly to parties. We're not dealing with the multi-party parties. Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Just before that, let me just say that how long I take on this point will depend whether I get to my constituency 5 hours earlier today. So I'm going to be very short, because I'd like to leave soon, because we're almost coming to the end. Chairperson, I'm glad you mentioned that the donation is cash and time. Now, I think there must be disclosure. Right? You see, where I have a problem is the word prohibited. Completely prohibited, particularly from foundations. Now, yesterday when we were in another forum, we heard about a capacity building program that Parliament received support for to the tune of $10 million, euros, right, from the European Parliament. And they've been receiving it for years to capacitate members of Parliament. Right? Now, I am saying we have received, and I think, I don't know if any other political party, have received certain capacity building, not cash, not at all, capacity building programs capacity built here in the country by local people, but funded by foundations that may have their headquarters elsewhere. So what I want to suggest is that we don't prohibit that, but we have a value to it. Because if the value becomes exorbitant, then we can question it. I mean, the IEC, whoever is monitoring it, can say, no, but, you know, this is ridiculous. This is a backdoor way of getting money. So I'm just arguing that we should not prohibit completely any support that we may get, not in cash outlawed, right? But in kind of capacity building. Because if you're building capacity to a councillor or an MP, I mean, it's going to help the country. So that's the proposal that I'm making, and I'll leave it at that.
Right. There's the proposal again. Members, are there any comments on it? We'll move it from the prohibition list to a list and qualify it. That's the proposal that is in place. And in kind, we're talking about kind. Honourable Lees.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we will support that because, for instance, after the Second World War, the re-establishment of Germany in their constitution, they have foundations. Every political party gets money from the German Bundestag into their foundation, and they are obligated to throughout the world promote democracy. That was one of the, what was the case that they finally did this? Anyway, it's a city name, not Nuremberg. Nuremberg's where they hung people or whatever they did there. But the point I'm making, is, Mr. Chairman, is these are efforts, by very noble efforts, to promote democracy. So a liberal party in the German Bundestag has to go out and find liberal parties throughout the world and promote it, and then a social. So I know the IFP gets from one foundation, we get from the Friedrich Naumann Foundation, ANC get from another foundation, but they're all funded by the German Bundestag. And so I really would support Marianne's proposal that kind of in-kind support should not be outlawed.
Any other changes or different views on the last point on the agenda? Are we happy to put that in our draft one? Okay, and you guys, are you happy?
Thank
so you guys understand what you're doing, that we find it. Okay, thank you very much, honourable members. That then takes us to
just for listen. Sorry, Mario, there's a different issue that we have not discussed at all. I don't want us to discuss it now. I just want to alert the members perhaps to go and think about that. And that deals with, we are now probably going to end up where we're going to enhance the funding to critical parts. We don't know how big, we don't know how much, but we're going to enhance that. In the regulations, the current regulations, there's a provision that says what you can do and what you cannot do. It's regulation 9 of the current regulations, paragraph 9. And there's a percentage built in that basically says all the monies that parties receive from the IEC, they are entitled to carry 50% of those funds over to the next financial year. They've got to spend the other 50%. All I'm saying is we need to look perhaps if that 50% is still going to be the amount. What I mean with that is if we enhance it now, I don't want us to force parties to go on a spending spree instead of allocating monies and drawing taking it over the next financial year for other purposes in terms of elections that may be coming around. So all I'm saying is let's just go and think about that. Should it remain 50% or should we also look at that? But the regulating thing is not in the act.
All right, let me just throw through in there that I'm not sure whether they should be in the act of the regulation. Something that we've not spoken about, and I don't know why, unless I accept it. We are invested in getting money into the multi-party democracy fund. How is that money going to be split? Is that something that we put in the regulation or should it be in the act? That's the first question. If it's in the act, it's fine. If it's in the regulation, it can be part of the thing that we'll do in the regulation. That's the one that I'm saying, let's talk about, and it's regulation and it helps us because it's good time. Exactly how we split the money in that, and where should it be located? The amount we can argue as we. The other one, honourable members, was the discussion that we were having here. And we said, yes, I'm saying, for purposes of also discussion, What are we saying about the thing that, that is spiking all of us? The problem. Should we not be at least saying adhere to 116 as the base and then go to the speakers and say please regulate 116 so that it doesn't include, because right now we're not saying anything about this, and I'm just asking the question. My view would be, I mean, there's no harm in us saying all political parties in provinces, we're not talking about local government, must adhere strictly to 116. And then we will find a way that that 116 is regulated so that they don't use it for beer parties and that type of thing. But I'm just saying we should not leave it out. So if members can comment on those two. Please.
Mr. Chairman, I think you're absolutely right. I thank you for raising it. I would suggest to you that the way provinces are distributing funds is outside the ambit of 116 in some instances. I mean, the constituency allowance that they pay, I think, would probably fall into the ambit of 116. But I think the party political funding that they pay is unconstitutional or in violation of this particular act. I don't think that 116 is constitutional. I don't think 116 makes provision for that, but that's my opinion, and it's the opinion of many others, actually. Would it be in order for us to get senior counsel opinion on that matter? Because why I say senior counsel as opposed to my junior counsel or very good parliamentary and Helton or whoever. But I think it is a matter that has been bouncing around for quite a few years now, between people saying it is, it isn't constitutional. And whatever the source of an opinion is, at very least we should get a parliamentary legal team opinion, I think, on the way that the funds are, some of the funds are distributed by provinces. Thank you.
Just on that one, Mr. Lee, and you can help me. I thought there was a constitutional court ruling related to the Limpopo one, where they said it's unconstitutional.
Maybe,
I'm saying we could go for this, but I'm saying there was a court ruling, and if nobody challenged the court ruling, I'm almost sure that Limpopo was struck down in court.
Yeah.
On this matter. And if that is the case, can we just leave it like that and just put something there that says follow 116? All right, Honourable Mulder and then Honourable Singh.
Chairperson, you asked a question about the distribution of allocation of funds in terms of the multi-party democracy fund. My understanding was that we said exactly the same formula should apply in terms of that fund as in terms of the other fund.
Okay.
But then I proposed that at some stage, and then I said, but maybe I will have to rethink, because if we cannot find one another in terms of the formula, then I don't want a wrong formula to be applied everywhere. Then I would have liked to see a different formula in terms to try and balance, but I don't think we are there at the moment. At the moment, I think what you've said in terms of triple C and that formula will be exactly the same for the multi-party fund. But for one thing, the IEC this morning in their presentation complicated it to a certain extent by saying, but the multi-party fund will obviously or perhaps also look at parties at municipal level, at underrepresented parties. They mentioned all those things. If that comes into play in the multi-party fund, you'll need a completely different formula in totality. If that's not the case, then the current thing can also be implemented with regard to that.
Yeah, Jefferson, lastly, and then the mayor be excused after that, is that let's get that judgment, right, for the benefit of all of us. But I think what they're doing, the legislation was outlawed, but they're using policies and something else. So they're using different mechanisms to achieve the same objective. So let's get the Constitutional Court judgment, and then let's see what they are using to appropriate these funds to themselves. Thank you, Chair. May I be excused?
You know, you may be excused. All right. That then concludes our business. No, it's not going to be possible. I'll tell you why it's not possible. Because each province decides how it wants to do it. So you have nine. What we are saying is that there is no legislation that I can tell. None of them are using legislation because of the Limpopo one. And then they all have policies. Speaker A, which helps him, does in that policy, he does that policy, and she does that policy. And that's what I'm saying. You need to find a universal way. But there's no one policy that they use. And that is why when we get to the speakers forum, maybe we should try and for us then to have a single policy.
No apologies for delay.
Honorable Patel.
Chair, I know our mandate to our scope doesn't include local government, but I think when we give our report back, it must be noted and that we must be cognitive about that when we make our decisions. Because we don't want to go back and have to redo and act and stuff. I mean, the Treasury has made it clear that there's nothing that is being properly regulated in terms of the funding all the way down to a local government. So I think we must be cognitive of that and consider that on how, as an option on how we're going to formulate and finalise the Act and the regulations as well.
All right, honourable members, we then will meet on the 14th. Hopefully by then Michael and his team would have draft one ready. We will distribute it to members before time. We will then have to deliberate on draft one, give it its blessing, and it goes through whatever it has to go through before it's made public. But our next meeting will be on the 14th, and there is lunch in the old assembly chamber. But honourable,
just say with regard to draft one, we have not dealt at all with the preamble and the definitions clause. I know that we need to do that before you finalise draft one. I don't know.
No. Can we do that then, and then we can play with it on the 14th? Is that okay? All right, then we meet honourable members on the 14th to look at 14th of September. 14th of September, the Thursday. There's no last day for this committee. We'll work on Christmas Day. We agreed on this. We meet on the 14th of November, then we look at draft one. Meeting is adjourned until then. Thank you very much.
So,
Is it main office?
Yeah.